whenever we stand against the flow of opinion on strongly contested issues. A man does what he must, in spite of personal consequences, in spite of obstacles, dangers, and pressures. And that is the basis of all human morality.
Now let's talk about self-expression, true expression. Open your minds without question, no doubt. Tell me what you're thinking about. Let's try to set aside pride and clout. Can you believe I feel the same exact way you do? You truly do believe these modern ways have fooled you. Systems exist so we never meet each other. Pretty soon from now they outlaw the word brother. And that's true if they see you walking with the crew. If you don't know, that means more than two. I'll tell you what they'll do. They'll pull over, hunt you over, kick your ass, might stick to your shoulder. I know it's unjust as if it wasn't enough. If you try to fight back, they're locking your ass up. And Chuck already told you that a cell is hell. But I'm waiting for the phone call, sick for a spell. Call the guard, tell him I'm a piece of God. With no beliefs in his streets or his boulevards. I eat rage so my mental is hard. And the heat from my anger just melted the bars. They reach for their guns so I put them to sleep. Break the chains and put the shoes back on my feet. He's on the loose with no discernible scars or marks. Just the mind of Mandela and the heart of Rosa Parks. So I dip. Time to see the governor and mayor. Tell them life ain't fair, see if they care. Well they do, but only if they on the air. So they appear to have a heart and make a flare. But they haven't done shit for us and that's a fact. Their only function is to keep the funny money where it's at. And it causes pain, stress. Ask me if we need a different way of life.
They kill anybody they want, and nobody cares, and anybody getting into a position to do anything about it gets killed.
Headline, Bush steals the presidency. He needs the backing of the meek, what could the remedy be? The country's headed for recession, reminiscent of the Great Depression. Our lives worth the world of power, easy question. Planes hit the towers in the Pentagon, killing those the government wasn't dependent on. It's easy to control the scared, so they keep us in fear. With their favorite Middle Eastern demon named Bin Laden this year. Bush disguises bloodlust as patriotism, convincing the living to love Operation. Let's get them. But when he realized we don't support their attacks, they needed something to distract. Anthrax. This brother demonizes Afghanis, so Americans cheer while we kill their innocent families. And what better place to start a war? To build a pipeline to get the oil that they had wanted before. America supported the Taliban to get Russia out of Afghanistan. That's how they got the arms, and they're in a war against the Northern Alliance. And we can't build a pipeline in hostile environments. Here's what your history books won't show. You're a dead man for fucking with American dough. They're killing several birds with one stone while you're at home with anti-terrorism up in your dome. But my eyes are wide open and my TV is off. Great, cause I save on my electricity costs. And you could wave that piece of shit flag if you did, but they killed us because we've been killing them for years.
All right. So before we begin, I'd like to like either of you to once again outline the details of the plea that was signed in order to avoid asking questions that could possibly violate that plea. And could you also explain to people why people listening why this is important, as well as the details of what the plea actually are?
Well, the plea was basically I was basically pleading guilty to distribution of information related to explosives with intent that information be used in a further crime of federal violence. I mean, that was just the basic charge of the plea, but within the plea bargain, there was other things like, I mean, they put, like, a bunch of, like, you know, just rhetoric and, like, they took things here and there and just put it together to make it look like I wasn't just pleading to that, but I was, you know, I was pleading to, like, all this other stuff that I wasn't being accused of, but they were just, you know, allegations. They weren't supported by any facts. They were never proved. They were just simply allegations. And, you know, the plea bargain had, like, I mean, it was funny because Not only did they you know, put that kind of stuff in there, but you know, after many, many times going back and forth changing plea bargains, they continued to put in that I authored the reclaim guide, that I authored and implemented the explosives the page that dealt with explosives, in which I didn't, because, I mean, I spoke directly to the FBI when they came to my house, and I told them, you know, at least 7 times that I didn't author that website, and I didn't author any explosive information, that I simply provided a link. But in every single plea agreement, that was rewritten because we had to go back and forth constantly. They, you know, every single time they put in that Sherman admitted he'd authored the reclaim guide and implemented the pages that dealt with explosives information.
So there's been a lot of response to your sentencing, and I want to go through a series of questions so that you can respond to some of the things in the context of the community that you're involved in, and even the press that has been writing about you. What's your response to those that claim you're not connected to activist networks?
Well, I am very connected to, you know, activist networks, and, you know, not even just activists, but just general community networks, you know, progressive networks and things like that. I'm just not, you know, very much connected to the typical white North American anarchist, scene, as you call it, or just, you know, anarchist, you know, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I'm very connected to networks, and even, in fact, you know, Racifist isn't just a website. It's also a direct action network with chapters, you know, not just within the U.S., but all around the world. And these chapters are different organizations, affinity groups, just, you know, regular groups of people, you know, taking initiative within their own local communities and just basically taking action. I mean, I'm more of, you know, I'm definitely an anarchist. I'm not saying I'm not an anarchist. I share the anarchist, you know, ideology, and I'm an anarchist. I call myself an anti-authoritarian, but, I mean, I'm more of like a community anarchist. I want to organize within the community. I work with, you know, any group that's going to do anything within the community, that's going to attend to the needs of that community, you know, and say, you know, people deserve to live better, you know, within that community. I mean, I've done so much organizing, like, not just within networks, but within other organizations, other small little community groups. I mean, I've talked to so many people.
Working with, like, the movement against the refinery?
Yeah.
And it's just, like, regular people that, like...
Talk closer.
It's just people like mothers and children and teenagers, like, working together, and they're all people of color. Like, it's not... They don't call themselves anarchists, communists, or anything. It's just people fighting for the same cause, for, like, environmental justice. Refineries polluting their neighborhoods and everything, and we all, like, get together and fight it. And Sherman is, like, willing to help out with them. He's not judging them for not being anarchists. He's actually joining them.
Yeah, like, I just don't, you know, base my organizing around just, you know, anarchists, you know. I'm not, like, if it's not anarchist, I'm not going to get involved. I'm going to get involved, you know, with anyone. I don't really care what you are, even if you don't call yourself anything, you know. That's even better to me because, you know, you're more open-minded. You're more, you know, willing to work with other people. I'm going to just get involved with, you know, any type of organization, anyone who wants to do something, you know, helping, you know, change the way things are going.
I think a lot of people are curious about the issue of the plea. And why is it that this wasn't brought to trial or fought for? And maybe you can address that. Why is it that you haven't had a high-profile attorney working on your case, for example, like the ACLU or the National Lawyers Guild or the Electronic Frontier Foundation?
Well, the ACLU was actually the first one contacted. Actually, Chantel will tell you.
I'll speak on that. I personally contacted the Los Angeles ACLU a number of 12 times total, email, phone calls, and that was right after Sherman was arrested in New York City, and he was being held there before he was released. And in response, I spoke to a lady named Liz, who I believe was the vice president at the time. She was way up there within the organization, and she specifically, in her words, told me, and I wrote it down because I was writing everything down that they were telling me, that they couldn't really do anything at all because this was a criminal case, and they mostly handle civil cases. And my response to her was, this is being brought about, though, as a criminal case because of his civil rights are being violated. It's being turned into a criminal case. And I would assume that lawyers would be able to understand that if I was able to understand that. This isn't a direct, like, disregard against the ACLU or the work that they do, but they pretty much made it clear early on with all the letters that we wrote and all the phone calls that we made that they didn't want to touch this case. They didn't want to really even help as far as, like, giving recommendations. I asked them if they could help us with recommendations for attorneys, and we really didn't get any response to that. It got to a point where we were calling and we were sending emails and getting no responses. And when we would call their direct office number, they would put us on hold and just transfer us to voicemail. And they made it pretty clear. I can tell. I don't these are assumptions, obviously, but I got the impression that for the fact that this was an anarchist website, he's a young guy, whatever they were, he was being accused of, they kind of didn't want to touch it, which was surprising because if you follow the ACLU, most of the stuff that they do is really out there and is pretty confrontational. I would think that this would be something they'd jump all over and be ready to take up, but there was really no interest on their part. They didn't want to recommend any attorneys to us. They didn't want to even read the papers from his case. The National Lawyers Guild helped us a bit. Carol Sobel and Bob Myers from there. Carol Sobel was leaving to go out of the country at the time, and she made references to us. She asked to see the case. She helped with that, and Sherman can take it from there because the Lawyers Guild did help somewhat in other things, and he can explain to you how he did what they did exactly.
Yeah, mostly the Lawyers Guild helped provide legal counsel and stuff like that. Me and my mom had meetings with them, you know, every once a week or you know a few times, you know, every a few weeks and stuff like that. And they were pretty helpful, you know, at the beginning. I mean, they provided legal counsel. You know, they told us, you know, what we should be doing, you know, if this happens, then we should do this. I mean, they also offered to represent my mom and my sister if in any case I had to go to trial, and they were also brought into this as well. You know, they offered, you know, even to provide their office in Sherman Oaks as a place where I can store my backups and things like that. And my lawyer, he's actually a public defender, Ron Kay. He used to be president of the National Lawyers Guild, and he picked up my case voluntarily, right?
Yes, he picked up. A lot of people made the mistake that he just went with a public federal public defender, but he didn't. He went with the person who became his attorney, used to run the National Lawyers Guild here. And people just assumed, why'd you go with a public defender? He came highly recommended, and he picked it up. He came recommended to the people that run the National Lawyers Guild right now. He wasn't just some random public defender. He was known to have defended similar cases such as this and familiar with issues such as this. So we did try. I mean, if there was money out there, we tried fundraising early on. And a lot of the things that have been posted, even within our own community, activist community website, saying, why didn't you get an attorney? Why didn't you go with someone better? Or making references to that these attorneys are just out there free, ready to be snatched up and go after a civil rights case. And it wasn't. These attorneys, I wish people would give us the names and numbers of these attorneys right now, since issues like these are going to continue coming up and more people are going to be harassed. But we tried. We tried extremely hard contacting all types of attorneys. Susan Tipograph, Sherman's lawyer in New York, who did an amazing job out there getting him safely back home here to us. But she was the only one that really, really was on top of things and on board. She tried to get different recommendations for different people for him out here and just kept running into walls. And we tried fundraising, but there was very little. There was very little media coverage. There was very little support at the time. Not too many people knew about it. And if they knew about it, the facts were very construed and, like, people were confused about it. And for people to sit there and say, why didn't you go with an ACLU attorney? Like, we didn't try going that route. Like, or we weren't geniuses in figuring that out. We tried. We tried every almost possible thing to exhaustion to the point that we started annoying these attorneys by calling them. But, his federal public defender came highly, highly recommended to us. He was very familiar with cases like this. That's
it. Yeah.
Have you discussed with your lawyer the possibility of reversing the sentence at this point?
No, not yet. To my knowledge, you can't appeal something once you've taken a plea under it. I don't know everything. Like, yeah, I've already been sentenced under a plea bargain. I don't know. I mean, to my knowledge, you can't appeal a plea bargain like that.
Some have claimed that while your sentence is outrageously harsh, you were reckless in posting a link to explosive information within the content of your site. What's your response to this?
Well, to me, like, I wasn't even doing anything illegal. Like, I just, you know, when I saw the website, I just, you know, skimmed through it. And keep in mind that this explosive information was just, you know, one little page out of 10 other pages of this website that majorly dealt with security culture and, you know, other things like that. I mean, I just kind of skimmed through the website and just, you know, I didn't see anything that looked like, you know, that I was going to, you know, directly hurt someone or, like, provide, you know, any type of information that was going to lead to any, you know, really devastating crime or violence or anything like that. So I just posted a link. I mean, it's no different than someone, you know, on their website maybe posting a link to the Abby Hoffman book or something, or posting a link to something on howthingsworks.com, or posting a link to Anarchist Cookbook. I mean, this link I posted to wasn't even comparison to Anarchist Cookbook. I mean, the stuff that was on there that dealt with explosives, I mean, it was just so pathetic compared to anything else you can you know, find available out there on the internet. I mean, there's so much more out there that's readily available on so many other websites that have, you know, explosives information on them, you know, and to say that, you know, linking to this website was, you know, careless, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, if anything, I would think linking to this website wouldn't get you in trouble because, I mean, it was just so, I mean, the stuff on there was just, you know, if not common knowledge stuff, nothing you can find on any other website out there, and nothing that, I mean, you can go on white supremacy websites and they link to, like, I mean, they just don't link to stuff. I mean, they have stuff on there that's like 10, 20 times as worse. I mean, everything from firearms to sabotage to assassinations, credit card frauds. I mean, everything on there. I mean, it's just, I mean, so, I mean, I don't think I was, you know, being, like, careless or anything like that. I was just, you know, just being normal on me, thinking that, you know, it wasn't legal, but apparently, you know, a lot of things are illegal these days.
You can check out, if you go to laindymedia.org, there is, within those pages of backup information, you can actually see the website. There's a mirror of the website that different people have put up, where you can actually see what he's being charged for, the site. Different people continue putting it up in various different places, and it's online. And if you check out laindymedia.org, you can see different links of different people that have websites that have it. And you can see it for yourself that it's completely harmless. Like, there's 10, 11 different pages on that one link. One of this being that, and it's very simple, like, it's a copy-paste job from so many other things that have been written. You can see that for yourself. And most people, you've probably read the information that's on there. It's things you can come up with in your own little mind. It's nothing extra or nothing extraordinary or special. And like you said, all over the internet, I did it myself. I went onto google.com and just typed in how to make a pipe bomb. And 10,000 different things showed up to major websites that are getting hits every single day. Anyone can do that, and none of them are being challenged. If you go to Amazon.com, you don't see Amazon being shut down for selling books on instructions on how to make things like that. It's informational, and there was disclaimers all over it too, and that's why we believe that he was, Sherman specifically, and Raise the Fist was targeted, and not the information that he was posting.
Yeah, you can also go to archive.org, and you can enter in RaiseTheFist.com, and you can actually see a cached version of RaiseTheFist.com. from January 23rd, 2002, which was a day before the raid. And if you scroll down, you can see the actual links that were just on the website that linked to this other, you know, reclaim guide. I mean, you can see that the links were there for a period of over 2 months until the FBI decided to raid the house.
And the issue that they're charging with is that in the context of the intent to commit a political act, is it's illegal to distribute this information.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the thing that's iffy about that is that at first in my plea agreement it said that I was distributing information on how to make explosives when, in fact, I just provided the link on my website. If anything, I was just distributing the link to another website that had a small thing on it that dealt with explosives information.
It has been reported also that you allegedly defaced a government website and left a hacking program on a government computer. What proof has the FBI presented you in regards to these allegations?
They provide very little evidence. We even asked them to come forward and show us anything else they had, and they just pretty much ignored us. I mean, they never proved any allegations. These were just basically nothing but allegations that were put into the arrest warrant and affidavit to just basically make it look, you know, just pretty for them and make it look like, you know, they had, like, this big old case going on and stuff.
And they claim that they found a Molotov cocktail at your house.
Yeah, they didn't prove that either. That was just another allegation they had in there.
To a lot of people that, different things that have been posted by the media falsely and been put out there, you have to remember, you're dealing with the federal government. They're gonna put a lot of misinformation to destroy his credibility. This is what they're meant to do. But do you really think that if they have found bombs in his house or that they had any evidence that he had defaced government websites, they would be going after him on such BS charges as a link? They don't have anything. They didn't find anything else besides that, and anyone that can read any of the discovery will see that. They talked about it a lot, but when it came time to actually prove it or show any evidence of it, they would be going, they didn't have anything. They would have gone after him. He would be facing, they would have never offered him this plea if they had anything like that. So I wish people would kind of, like, stop spreading that disinformation around, because it just perpetuates this type of mentality. Everything that they're trying to feed you, it's really sad to see activist communities continuing to spread that and talk about it like it actually happened. But if you read anything within the discovery or evidence of the case, you'll see There was nothing like that. He was never, they didn't come up with anything. It was just hearsay and BS and talking, and once it came down to proving it, they had nothing on them.
There was also mention of a firearm. What was that about?
Yeah, that was the alleged Molotov cocktail.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It wasn't a gun.
And weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah.
They found iced tea and Snapple bottles in his house that were empty, and thought that he was going to make Molotov cocktails. I'm not kidding. They took pictures of, like, Snapple bottles and they have it in the discovery. They said that he was going to use those to make Molotov cocktails. And they found potting soil within its original potting soil bag and called it fertilizer. That was in his car.
Yep.
It's clear the FBI was directly targeting you and Raise the Fist, given that they filed no charges against the author of the website that originally posted the explosives information, who happens to be white and from a wealthier family. And it's also clear that any commentary regarding your case, to me, it seems it lacks a race and class analysis. I'd like to hear in your own words, and based on your experiences, not only with the FBI, but other activists and lawyers, how race and class has played a key role in this case.
Yeah, it definitely plays a key role. I mean, if you look at people who get screwed over the most, get arrested, you know, even just targeted the most at any demonstrations or any type of political organizing they do, it's usually always people of color. And, you know, the majority of people of color come from low-income families. They don't have the money to afford, you know, a big private attorney who can defend them in court and take them to trial. So usually, I mean, they're just forced into this, you know, copying a plea because, I mean, what are you going to do when you come from a low-income background, you don't have money to hire a private attorney, and you're stuck with this public defender who just... He knows himself he can't take it to trial because he knows himself he can't win. And, you know you're not guilty. I mean, you know you're innocent. You want to go to trial, but, you know, if you go to trial, you're not going to win. I mean, it's just like, it's not...
It's a catch-22.
Yeah. They talk about it's a system of justice. It's not a system of justice. I mean, it's like you're already proven guilty until... I mean, they say you're innocent until proven guilty, but in fact, it's the other way around. I mean, you're guilty until proven innocent. I mean, if you have enough money to prove yourself innocent, I mean, that's just the way, you know, the system works. And, you know, you just don't see it within, you know, the activist community, but the general community in itself. I mean, I've seen people who've gotten, you know, 14 years, 20 years, just because they don't have enough money to hire a private attorney and take it to trial. Because, I mean, they themselves have, you know, pretty much been convinced that they can't fight the system because, you know, they don't have the resources to do so. While other people, like the people like Enron, who are like, I mean, have so much money. I mean, they've destroyed so many people's lives, you know, ruined so many people's, you know, futures. I mean, they haven't even got a slap on the wrist, if anything. I mean, another example is, like, look at the OJ case. I mean, that case was just such a good example of, like, how money dominates, you know, the judicial system in this country, you know, how money just dominates everything in this country, from the media to politics, I mean, to every little aspect of this country.
Do you have an FAQ somewhere posted about all these questions we're raising? I was just curious.
No, not yet.
Okay.
We're working on it.
Okay.
We've been really busy.
I'm sure.
It's a good idea, though.
Last week we talked a little bit about the security culture issue. And I find the topic of security culture is really, really important, obviously. But it seems to me that all the knowledge in the world with respect to security culture could not have predicted that the prosecutors would charge you simply for linking to another website. And, I mean, indeed, as far as I'm aware, this is unprecedented. It also would not have prevented them from fabricating the Molotov cocktail charges. Do you have any comments about this?
Yeah. A lot of people have said, you know, why didn't you use security culture? Why didn't you act, you know, more secure about everything? But, I mean, like, what else was I supposed to do? I was running a public website that was open to the public that anyone can visit. I mean, I had nothing to hide. I mean... The stuff that was on there was stuff that anyone can see. I mean, if I was doing something illegal, which I wasn't, I mean, obviously there'd be a reason for security culture, but everything I was doing, as far as my knowledge goes, was legal and it was perfectly fine. So, I mean, what else could I have done to not have the FBI raid my house besides shutting down the entire website? I mean, that's the most secure thing you can do, but when you do that, I mean, what's the point of even having a website?
On your website, did you talk about overthrowing the U.S. government? And if so, did you advocate doing so with the use of violence? That comes from somebody on Instant Messenger.
No, mostly what my website advocated was self-defense, and I think that's something that's just, you know, plain logic. If you're under attack by someone, I mean, it just makes sense that you have a right to defend yourself. I mean, a lot of people say, you know, they look at, you know, people, you know, advocating self-defense, you know, like, oh, that's a crime. But, you know, what Raise the Fist advocated is that it's a crime to teach someone not to defend themselves when they're a constant victim of brutal attacks. And I mean, with all this stuff going on, which is, you know, not just police brutality, but, you know, the way this country polices countries all over the world by using, you know, basic you know, the implementation of police states in foreign nations, I think people have a right to defend themselves when they're constantly under attack. And I think that's what Raise the Fist promoted. It didn't promote, you know, reckless violence or just going out there and rioting. It promoted, you know, educating yourself on a diverse array of tactics of self-defense and, you know, having knowledge of that, you know, for yourself, you know, for your own personal reasons, you know, just, you know, to basically, you know, protect yourself and protect your own human rights.